WIOX is supported by Rick's Tire Service, family-owned and operated on State Route 30 between Roxbury and Grand Gorge. Tires, mounting, and wheel balancing for cars, trucks, lawn, garden, farm, and construction vehicles. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. More information at 800-LG-TIRES, 800-LG-TIRES. WIOX is supported by Mountain Flame in Arkville, featuring a range of products for home heating solutions. A variety of fireplaces, wood stoves, and gas and pellet stoves are available and on display. For sales and service, Mountain Flame in Arkville, warming home since 1980. Details at mountainflame.com. WIOX is supported by Qualteri's Nursery on Route 30 in Roxbury. Open 7 days a week from 9 to 5. CDC COVID compliant and in business for 23 years to help with trees, shrubs, pottery, houseplants, perennials, soil, mulch, and more. Qualteri's Nursery. 607-326-4282. 607-326-4282.
If you love traditional Irish music the way I do, why not tune into Real Irish? I'm Tom Wadsworth, your host, every other Saturday at 10 a.m. on WIOX in Roxbury. Community radio, live and local in the Catskills at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, WIOXradio.org, and with any FM radio mobile app.
Okay, you're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. With Ryan and John since 2010. Right, John?
2014.
Okay.
Close.
It's been a while. And so what have you been up to, John?
I've been milling up American Beech and White Ash the last 2 days.
Beech nut
tray. Yeah, Gary's favorite, right?
Yeah. How's it coming out?
Some of it's all right. Some of it's a little past and a little rotted, I think. But the member of the Catskill Forest Association that's having us do it is really looking for spalted wood. So.
Yeah.
It's that borderline. I don't know if this is going to work out for you, but some of it came out really nice.
It's just downright busy. There are a lot of people in the Catskill Mountains right now. Yes. Due to the pandemic, of course, a lot of people are deciding, I'm not moving back to the city. And anecdotally, I talked to our members, the Catskill Forest Association's members, and they're moving up and they want to remain. Mm-hmm. And we've been planting trees as well. That's the other program there. So people are... busy looking around their woods, looking around their homes, and trying to make improvements. But it's been maybe 8 years. I don't know, 5 to 8 years. When it's past 3 years, it's like it's 8 years to me. And we had a forest ranger on, Ken Gierloff from Region 3. But tonight we have Joseph Bink. He's a forest ranger in Region 4.
That's correct.
Yeah. How have you been?
Good. Very good. Trying to, enjoy the outdoors as best I can.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, where are you from? Who are you?
I am originally from Rensselaer County, a small town called Berlin. It's about 40 minutes to the east of Albany. And the best way to explain it is probably, I always tell people, it's basically where Vermont, Massachusetts, and New York all come together. So it's much like Roxbury.
Yeah. I used to go to a place called Old Kent. What was that? Old Man Kent or something on the way to Putney or whatever. I used to go through Troy. It's not near there,
old
though.
Old Man Kent. Yeah. Like Kent. The tavern?
Like an old,
the tavern up there on 22.
That up there.
Old Man Kent. Yeah. It's still there.
Okay.
It's a good tavern.
That's all I know.
That's good to know, though. That's a good spot to know.
Right. Yeah, I used to live in Vermont back in the day. But so what got you into this forest ranger position? How did you land this?
Yeah, I think I've just always had a love for the outdoors. I guess one of those things as you grow up, go through high school, you kind of question what you want to do in life.
Yeah.
And I took some time off from school, did the military thing. Ended up trying to go into some kind of environmental studies field. And then I was introduced to a local forest ranger in Rensselaer County at my local community college. And he came in and he spoke to us during the opening orientation. And he kind of inspired me, older gentleman, but inspired me. I thought he's a cool job.
Yeah.
Outdoors, natural resource protection, wildfire prevention, and search and rescue. I said, this is an awesome job.
Yeah.
And after that, I kind of pursued that. The funny thing, he came in, and when he told us this, that was back in 95, so I'm kind of giving my age here. But back in 95, we had the Sunrise Fires in Long Island. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with that or if any of your listeners are from the island.
I'm not.
Yeah, so it was a big fire in the Pine Barrens. And a lot of resources involved, federal resources. But the fire actually jumped the Sunrise Highway, the four-lane. I think it's a four-lane east and west, so eight lanes basically. You know, so it's at the four lanes, median, and the four lanes, and jumped the Sunrise Highway. And the funny thing he said at the orientation, and he said it jokingly, but he kind of was a little disturbed, you know, a little bothered. He's like, if it wasn't for this orientation presentation, I'd be at the Sunrise Fire. So he kind of missed out on that. But that kind of sparked my interest, yeah. And I'm sure he got sent down at a later time. But, it was
Pitch pines and stuff and...
Pitch pines, exactly. Yeah. With the serotonin cones and all that good stuff. Yeah.
Crown fire and kidding.
Yeah, so it was pretty
eight lanes.
Yeah, pretty intense. Yeah. They expected that to be a good fire break, and obviously it didn't stop the fire. It jumped. Yeah,
it's so a big fire break.
Yeah, no, it is, and I can only imagine what the fire behavior must have been.
Yeah,
at that point to jump.
Had to be some wind, right?
Yeah, something. Had to been. Yeah, had to. I know they had the C-130s coming in.
Yeah.
It got to a point where they were coming in with retardant drops, and it was definitely as a ranger, something you want to be involved in, and chomping at the bits to get on. Obviously dangerous, but definitely a cool experience to see. Get some cool pictures and all that. But he sparked my interest. His name was Leo Chamberlain, and he sparked my interest, and I said, that's something I want to pursue, and then. From that point on, from the community college, I said, I'm going to see what my options are. And we mentioned the SUNY Ranger School in Wanakina. Went up there and attended that, got my 2-year degree, and moved on. The rest is history. So
how well is your Reinhardt?
Ah, jeez. Yeah. I have not attempted that, and I probably will never attempt that ever again. If I had to do it, I think it'd be pretty good. I'd have to do some practice for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, and I assume you guys were sharpening axes in that shed over there by candlelight.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Candlelight?
Candlelight, but I mean, the electricity.
It's funny because I went back up to the ranger school in Wanakina back in 2003. I was in a reserve unit. We got activated. My wife and I were at Fort Drum. And I said, let's go over and check the school out. Went over. They had added on to the school. They're expanding, and then my wife went back up in 2018 for my 20th anniversary, And they've really expanded. I know Paul Smith is another great school to go to for forestry, but they've really expanded up in Wanakina, and they're doing well, and I think it's a prospering school. So if you have any listeners out there that are interested in the forestry field, environmental field, that's definitely a school to check out.
I haven't been up there since 2004 when I graduated. Yeah. It's a weird school because it was started by, what, World War I vets, I believe.
I'm not even sure. Yeah.
Early 1900s, you know.
Yeah. It was much more paramilitary, I think, back in the day from what I've been told. So.
Yeah.
But, it's an interesting school.
Yeah.
You know, just to even research and get the history on. So,
I mean, forest rangers is kind of confusing to people.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of things going on in New York State. You know, we have state park rangers.
Yep.
We have NCON officers, environmental conservation officers. I mean, we have campground rangers.
Right.
It's all confusing to people. How would you describe a forest ranger, New York State DEC forest ranger?
Our job is threefold. Like you said, there's different agencies with park rangers, forest rangers. We're obviously with state DEC, and our job is threefold. We're, I guess the three primary job duties are law enforcement on DEC state land. When we have jurisdiction outside of that, but our priority is the state properties. It's wildland search and rescue and wildfire suppression and prevention. So those are the three things, but our job has changed so much. I've been on almost 16 years. Our job has changed so much in that time, just with law enforcement aspect and the other emergency responses.
That's the biggest change, you think, in law enforcement?
Law enforcement, and then the fact that our job is expanding with incident command. You know, we've been involved with the COVID test sites within the state.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we had rangers assigned to kind of run them along with other, overhead positions. So our job is, you know, you wouldn't think of a forest ranger being signed up at SUNY Albany, you know, running a testing site for the COVID virus. But our job is just taking so many twists and turns. It's interesting, and obviously each ranger pursues their individual desire. You know, if you're really big in law enforcement, you can focus on that in your career. If you're big in the search, big in the fire.
Yeah.
I've tried to keep it balanced. I figure if I get a call for any situation, I should be pretty well versed in what I need to do.
Yeah.
Obviously, other rangers focus more on fire, search and rescue. We have a couple crews already this year, a couple modules actually that have been going out west. We have a crew or module just left this morning.
To California.
I'm not sure if it's California. It might be.
Yeah,
I know. We had a crew just come back yesterday, or actually late last night, from Colorado. That was our second mod that went out, and the third mod is going out as of today. I'm not sure exactly where they're going. I know they kind of keep it hush hush, and who the members are that are going. They don't tell out until they come back.
Right.
That's what makes the job so fun.
Yeah.
It's a variety of things. You're not stuck to doing one thing. But back to the law enforcement aspect.
Yeah.
Our job has changed so much in that aspect that not in a bad way necessarily.
I feel like it's a big change. When I was a seasonal ranger in 2005, it was just beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's when I came out of the academy back in 2005. And, the job just, America's changed. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
And especially in the last couple of years. So, we're expected to do more, and I guess rightfully so, to a point. But we also turn over a lot of stuff to the, state police, county sheriff, department. It really just depends on the situation, what we got going on, and vice versa. They obviously, if they need our assistance for something, they reach out to us and bring us in. So I always look at it as a team, team spirit, because I'm gonna tell you right now, I don't know everything about the ranger job. I'm still learning at 16 years, and I think that's, I'm a humble guy. I'm pretty honest. I'm not going to stand here and beat my chest. I am this guy knows everything when it comes to the job, by no means. But, I look at it, you get an incident, any incident, whether law enforcement, search, fire, you work as a team, your end result is the same. So, but our job has changed a lot. And I think, you look at the old time rangers that, have long time retired, it's just a different approach. And
how so? I mean, how do you think?
Our job, we go through a 6-month law enforcement academy, and that's been going on. I think.
Where is that again? Is that SUNY Oswego?
That's my academy was the last one there.
Oh.
And then they've kind of had a couple different locations, but right now it's in Pulaski.
Really?
Yeah, and I think it's moving. That. It's moving down towards Syracuse. I think the next academy is going to be near Syracuse. Yeah, we go through a six-month law enforcement academy, which includes law enforcement. For us, as rangers, wildfire and search and rescue.
And are the ECOs with you as well, the conservation officers?
Yeah, initially. So whenever we need new members brought on, we piggyback and join into an ECO academy.
Right.
And we're together for several weeks or months, and then we split away to do the fire and search.
You said you had military, you're in the military, the Army?
Yep, I was in the Army, yeah.
I take Fort Drum. Yeah. So how would you describe the boot camp at the DEC as a military person?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I would actually say, depending on who you get for DIs, like I think my academy was pretty intense, pretty tough.
Yeah.
I would say it probably was a little tougher than basic for the Army.
Yeah, I've heard it's very military-like.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, I don't know what the comparison is to the state police. You know, they're pretty gung-ho.
Yeah.
So I would say it's probably somewhat close to what they go through. But, yeah, comparing it to the basic for the Army.
You shine boots?
Oh, yeah.
Well, locker inspections?
Yeah. Well, your room, dumping your room, changing, running out. It's just, yeah, it's craziness. Yeah. You know, they basically put you in a position where you're being stressed out.
Yeah.
Yeah. For any situation.
Yeah.
So it's that's the funny thing. We mentioned how the job has changed.
That's a big difference.
A lot of people look at forest rangers and they just see somebody walking through the woods looking at trees. And that's the ongoing joke, right? And you know what? I do that sometimes, you know, depending on what's going on, right? Because our job is varied. But, our job as a ranger now, we're expected to do a lot more, and like I said, rightfully so. But we're not just out in the woods, you know, walking with Smokey looking at trees.
Let's decipher between, you know, for listeners, between a forester and a forest ranger, right? Okay. I mean, there's a difference, right?
There is, yeah. Yep. So basically, you know, a forester would be somebody that manages the property for whatever it is, timber value, wildlife habitat, or whatever situation.
Yeah.
As a ranger, you know, we typically have the same sort of background for the most part, a forestry background. But our job, like I said, is more enforcement. You know, we work with the forester, and that's what I do out of our Stanford office. I work with the Forest Preserve forester. And, you know, I'll throw things out to her as to what she thinks is appropriate and give her my thoughts on, you know, for management purposes. But in the end, she makes the final decision because she's the forester. As the ranger, we're assigned basically to make sure that people are, you know, using state land safely. And, appropriately without, violating any New York state law, whether it be environmental conservation, V&T, vehicle and traffic, penal law, and obviously the search and rescue and wildland fire. So we're not actually land managers as the forester would be. So
if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is Forest Ranger Joseph Bink. Go on, John.
So how far do you think, or where does your job differ greatly from an ECO? Because I think people see those similar vehicles driving around.
Right.
And might meet you two at the same type of trailhead.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good question. I think most people that see us in the green uniform, they think we're all the same. Obviously, you know, our division is Division of Forest Protection. It used to be Fire Management and Forest Protection. Their division is Division of Law Enforcement. They're the traditional, you know, police officers.
Right.
They're the game wardens. They go on private land, yes.
Do you go on private land as much?
We can, but we typically don't. It depends on the situation. If it's adjacent to state land, then obviously we get involved. But if we have something going on private, especially environmentally conservation related, we pass it off to the conservation officer. So Vern Bauer and Jared Wood, another two conservation officers in this portion of the county.
So trespassing would be ECO issue?
Yes, on private land. Absolutely, yeah. Yep. Say, shooting within 500 feet of a dwelling on private land, absolutely you pass that off.
Right.
I mean, if they're not able to respond or deal with it, then obviously we do. But, obviously, same thing. I feel the same way when it comes to, you know, the conservation officers, rangers work as a team.
Yeah.
You know, we're working for the same agency. Our end result is the same. So,
And I still do. Like, forest rangers always seem more approachable to me. and that was even before I was one. seasonal ranger a long time ago.
Right.
But the first time I met a forest ranger was actually when we were hunting. We were 16, 17 years old over in the town of Plattekill in Ulster County.
Okay.
And if you said his name, I'd remember it. Maybe Carpenter is his last name?
Yeah.
He was down in I think he's up north now. They all go north.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, up to the Adirondacks.
Yeah, TJ Carpenter.
TJ Carpenter, yeah.
The guy was great. Yep. All of a sudden, there's a fire going. This guy just pulls up in a red truck back then.
Yep, yeah, it was red back then, yeah.
Very nonchalantly gets out, and he's like, oh, you guys want to work on the fire thing? And I didn't realize that he could make us back then work, volunteer on the fire crew. The fire department came, and this guy just set up shop and was the incident commander, right? He basically directed the fire department, local fire department, how to fight the fire. They put a control line around it, and that was my first thing. I had no idea about forest rangers.
Yeah, yeah. TJ actually came out, I think, two or three academies before me. He's out in Region 8, so Western New York.
Could be.
Central, Western, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, his father was a ranger. And TJ, yeah, it's funny you say that, because TJ was a hotshot. He was on the Forest Service hotshot crew. And real good guy.
Seemed very comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. He knows his stuff when it comes to fire. He's actually one of the instructors at my academy. Yeah, no, most, you know, it's funny because most rangers, I would say, have a, you know, a pretty laid back approach. I don't know if that's good or bad, depending on, who you are. But, I would say I know TJ, and if you were doing something wrong, say it was hunting related, he wouldn't have been that nonchalant guy coming up in.
Yeah.
You know, he would have been, tactful and appropriate.
Yeah.
A professional. But, different approach. And yeah, it's a different thing when you're dealing with fire. You try to wear that white hat and be the good guy in green. Obviously. Right. And now, especially with everything going on, it's even more so prevalent than years past.
So forest rangers in New York is kind of special, isn't it? I mean, the history of it and the presence of it today.
Yep.
Isn't there only one other state that has state forest rangers? Isn't that Maine? I don't know.
That's a good question. My information
in my head is pretty old at this point.
Yeah, that's
it's no longer new.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good question. I don't have an answer for that. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, you look at some of these shows that they have out now, like Northwoods Law and the different positions they have. I think as for forest ranger, for what we do as police officers, I think we might be one of a few states that have forest rangers as police officers. Most forest rangers are
typical. I think Nick's title in New Hampshire is forest ranger.
No.
I think it is.
Are you sure?
I think his role is much different than New York State. He's has got more of an ECO, but I don't think they have true ECOs, and that's where his role falls.
Yeah.
I'd have to double-check that, though.
Because when I used to study it, Maine was the only comparable state that had search and rescue and fire as their main chief component in education as well. But, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that I could find.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you might be correct on that, Ryan, because I know when I've gone out of state on fires, we obviously join up with other crews from neighboring states, and I think the rangers from Maine, I believe, they weren't law enforcement. The forest rangers from Maine, they were not law enforcement. I think strictly fire and maybe, like I said, search and rescue. So, our position as a forest ranger in New York State, I think is unique.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people coming into New York or say not from upstate New York might perceive, forest ranger not being law enforcement in any way.
The tree fuzz.
The tree fuzz, yeah.
It's a good
the tree,
one.
The tree guy or tree gal, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine. It is what it is. I think we mentioned our job has changed. They've changed the colors on our vehicles now. Was red way back when.
I like the red.
I like the red too. When I first came on, it was red.
Yeah.
That lasted maybe 6 months, and then it went to green, which was good. Now it's gray. It's a gray color.
Yeah.
And they've outfitted our vehicles with obviously police on the vehicle because we are officers, and some rangers, I'm not gonna lie to some rangers, maybe weren't so keen on that, but I look at it as twofold. If you're gonna pull somebody over on a vehicle in traffic stop, I'd rather have my vehicle identified as a police officer than just as ranger. I not to go off scheme a little bit, but I gotta commend any man or woman out there that's wearing a uniform today with the stuff that's going on in America. So and that's one of the reasons why I think that, having that on our vehicle is appropriate.
Yeah.
And, we are police officers from New York State. It's different. We're not the traditional police officer. But nonetheless, we are police.
Well, you got a pickup truck for still.
Yeah. Right?
Do you have a chainsaw in the back still?
I do. I have two, actually.
What do you got? Steel or Husqvarna?
Two Huskies. Yeah, two Huskies, yeah.
How big they are? What are you using?
I got a 562, nice. And then we had a 365. We got rid of that. They gave us the 562. I got one from operations, smaller saw that I use for trail work. So that's one of the aspects of the job that I enjoy doing. We do the law enforcement. There's days though I pull my duty belt, just put the pistol and cuffs on, throw on the saw pack, throw on the saw, and spend a day 8 hours doing trail work up on trail in the preserve. So it's a varied job. It's fun, for sure.
Awesome.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is Forest Ranger Joseph Bank. And up next, I'm going to ask him what your day-to-days are like, and maybe by season as well.
Your
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is Forest Ranger Joseph Bink. He works out of the Region 4 office covering Delaware County.
That's correct. Yep. Eastern, right. Eastern half. Yep.
Eastern half of Delaware. It's a big county.
It is.
Yep. We don't go to Western Delaware, right, John?
What are you talking about?
What? You went today?
Oh, no. But we do.
Once in a while. Like Deposit? Come on.
Yeah, I've only been there two or three times,
there
I guess.
You go.
That's too far. Area. Too far south and west, right?
Yeah. It's far.
Yeah, it is far.
That Cannonsville's big.
Yeah, it is. For but, sure.
Yeah, so, like, what's a day to day as New York State Forest Ranger in the Catskill Mountains?
Yeah, day to day. Typically, we're responding to complaints, active complaints, boundary line patrol, like I mentioned before, trail work if need be. It really just does vary. This coming weekend, I'll be over at probably the state campground. You know, running radar, checking out campers, primitive campers at Big Pond, Russell Brook.
Yeah.
It really does kind of vary, but I guess the steadfast is patrolling that state land, at least for my district that I cover. The search and rescue stuff and the fire stuff obviously comes up, and we deal with it. We actually got a call out the other night, like two nights ago, for a potentially down plane in the Cannonsville. You mentioned Cannonsville, yeah. It came in around. It
doesn't happen too often anymore.
No. It's funny because I had to respond up to Schoharie County back in July for same thing, possibly downplane up near Minekill State Park.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Both became, well, the Minekill one in Schoharie became unfounded. They thought maybe it was a drone or something else being put up in the sky late at night. The one in Cannonsville, they confirmed the plane landed in Binghamton.
Okay.
So, you know, good ending.
Yeah.
But obviously, something like that comes in. It's not the typical search, right?
Right.
Down plane, whether it's in the Cannonsville or around the Cannonsville. So yeah. I got the call probably around, you know, 1930, 7:30, and headed down. Jason Seeley is another ranger here in Delaware County. And his area down in town of Walton, he responded down as well. And by the time I got there, it was probably about 9:30 at night. Ton of resources at the Cannonsville, so Route 10 and 268.
Yeah.
But, those type of things are the things of the job that make it interesting and vary your day-to-day routine. But typical day routine is setting up, you know, you're going to check these certain areas. Obviously, the weekends are the busy time, so we try to be out in Stateland as much as possible.
Is it busy?
Yeah.
Is it busier than?
Yeah, this year with the COVID, it's been extremely busy. And Delaware County compared to, say, Greene County, which is also in Region 4, comparison-wise, we are nothing to what goes on over there. Catasco Falls, Catasco Clove. I'm sure you guys have probably seen stuff on the news with the garbage and the number of people coming through.
Yeah.
I was just talking to somebody today how I was assigned over there one day in July, one day in August. And I was there on a Sunday in July because they're so busy. They would pull us over there on a weekend. So I was there one day on a Sunday in July, and the assistant rangers that were there, one was assigned just to park cars.
Oh, yeah.
That many people coming in. People were telling me that they sat in line for almost 2 hours just to get to the parking lot.
Unreal.
To check out the falls.
Wow.
Yeah, and most of the people are obviously not from the area, right?
That's a dangerous road.
Yeah, so Laurel House Road coming down in, picture traffic going all the way out. Yeah. So obviously we want people to enjoy the state land. Yeah. It's a beautiful area over there, just like the area I cover in Big Pond, Little Pond area, Russell Brook. But the sheer number of people coming in is pretty overwhelming for, say, one ranger to deal with.
Yeah.
So that day, I think the assistant ranger counted up to 700 people coming through in a six-hour day just to come down to Catterskill Falls.
Wow.
And I got to say, most people, for the most part, everybody's really good.
Yeah.
You know, we restrict certain things, no alcohol in the area, you know, no glass bottles, no radios.
Right.
And I think I spoke to maybe two or three people the entire 6 hours I was there. So I gotta knock on wood that most people are doing the right thing with everything going on with the virus.
No grills.
No grills down there. Yeah. Yeah. But people want, yeah, people brought their drones in. That's one thing that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And
what's the deal with that?
Does
that work?
Depending on the classification. And what they're doing with the drone, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that is allowed on wild forests, not wilderness.
Not wilderness.
Right.
That right.
So that day we had two people that wanted to fly drones. I won't go into details, but yeah, we had to obviously address that. But, you know, like I said, I've been there twice, and I give credit to Rob Dawson. He's the ranger over in Greene County. And he covers that area, and he's doing a great job. He's got to be tearing, you know, his hair out at times because it is a busy spot.
Yeah, so. I mean, the other hot spot is the Blue Hole. You know, and how do you mitigate something like that? How do you target
I think
nipping that in the bud or when the bud is now fruited into a long branch?
Right. I think Region 3 has done a really good job. Yeah. I'm not going to lie to you. That's one spot I have not been to, whether it be work or on my personal time. But same thing. I think they obviously assign rangers down there, and I think they still do that. But now I think it's based on a permit process, which it really, in the end, that's probably what has to happen to some of these locations.
Right. So accessible.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, the state land's out there for the public to use. That's what it's there for, right? The taxpayers. But obviously, there comes a point where too much is too much, and somehow, and that's where the foresters or natural resource managers come into play, and they try to obviously curtail or, you know, deal with whatever they have going on. So I think Region 3, I think Bill Rudge is the natural resource supervisor over there, and Bill's done a great job from what I heard. And I think the rangers, from what I've heard, too, they said it's not nearly as bad as it's been in years past. So,
so there's search and rescue, fire, and law enforcement's a component.
Yep.
Education, how much is that? Is that also?
Yeah, it depends. You know, it depends. And I guess I'll step back too. It depends. You know, when it comes to enforcement, search and rescue, and fire, it depends on where you're assigned in the state. Yeah. Obviously, right? So I know I started out downstate.
Where was that?
Probably shouldn't say this, but yeah. No, I started out in New York City.
Really?
Yeah.
And you were the one forest ranger?
Yeah, I was the one forest ranger at one point. Yeah.
Where were you patrolling?
There's state land down there. Yeah, there is. But that was a big public education position. Yeah. And I spent 2 years down there and transferred up, and I've been here ever since.
Wow.
But, yeah, no, it depends. Like I said, it depends. But, you know, public education is important, not only for just educating the adults, but obviously the kids too. And we try to put some good programs on. Obviously, Smokey Bear is the big one that we do for the wildfire, and that's always a big hit for the kids. So
Smokey Bear is strict. You can't just unleash him, huh?
You can't. No, yeah.
There's rules.
There are rules. Yeah, yep. There are rules, and he only comes out every now and then.
Yeah.
It's great with the kids, though. You know, it's one of those things. I'm not gonna lie. That's one aspect of the job where I'm you know, yeah, I love kids. Don't get me wrong, but it's not the best thing for me, right? And it's fun because you have to get down into their level. Right, to make them think and understand. It's funny how some of the kids will be like, where's Smokey go after, you know, after he leaves here? And I always tell him he goes back in the woods.
Right.
And we had one kid down at Walton, and he's actually coming around to school. You know, he's looking up in the woods for him after he left. You know, and one of the teachers were telling me that. And I had one Smokey event I did down in the city in Staten Island, and this kind of caught me off guard. The kid comes up to me, and he's like, I thought Smokey was a real bear. Right. Yeah. So I answered what I thought was appropriate. I won't go into detail, but I answered what was appropriate. The mom got a good laugh out of it. But, yeah, it's one of those things that it's fun doing that for the kids, making them think. And even the adults. I think sometimes the adults actually love it more so than the kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, the adults obviously know who Smokey is. And it's fun doing that kind of stuff in some of the fire, you know, the parades that they have within, the firemen's field and stuff like that. And, you know. They're all pro Smokey, and he's got a good message about, you know, making sure you're safe with the you know, with fire when you're in the woods. I mean, look at the stuff going out west right now in California and
right.
So, it's a good thing.
So have you had any search and rescues? You know, lost people out there in the woods?
Yeah, quite a few. Obviously, starting out downstate, not really, but up here in the Catskill Park a lot, and you know, obviously Slide Mountains. The highest peak in the Catskills. We had a rescue a couple years back. I wasn't involved in this, but winter rescue. I think it was February, March of 2019. And we had two or three rangers that had to stay overnight up on the peak.
On slide.
And it was at that time when we had extreme temperatures.
Yeah.
Like down in the teens. You know?
No kidding.
And we had to send more rangers in to bring in extra equipment and gear, and they stayed. And
injury up there.
Yeah, it came. The call came in. It was a Sunday night. Call came in initially as a party of like three or four, and a dislocated hip up on top of Slide.
Ooh. Oh, man.
Yeah. So you can only imagine what was going through, you know, our minds as Rangers when I came in. And, you know, I give credit to the Rangers that responded up there. They did a great job. Long story short, was an old, I think, basketball injury.
Yeah.
You know, some kind of athletic injury. They set him up inside the mod that we have for winter camping, winter tent. And he, you know, got heat, hot fluids inside him. Basically, I think it was just the muscles kind of spasm.
Yeah.
Tensed up in extreme cold. The four individuals were not prepared to be up there. I think they had sneakers on. You know, he probably had like two to 3 feet of snow. You know, it just, yeah, the conditions were not appropriate. And that's I think, one of the things that you see so much as Rangers, especially in the wintertime, people don't prepare themselves to be in the woods. And even when you are prepared,
right.
You know, accidents happen.
Absolutely.
And, you know, those are the ones that obviously you go into and you like, okay, these guys did the right thing, just something happened.
Yeah.
It's the ones that, you know, no light, no map, sneakers up on top of a peak with sheer ice or snow. You question.
What's one thing that you would recommend to people, you know, to do maybe?
Yeah, I would say do your homework.
Yeah.
Pre-plan. I think the biggest thing I see in the summertime with hikers is no light source, whether it be a flashlight or headlamp. You see people with their iPhones or you know, whatever they got for a phone, using it as a light. And then, you know, be familiar with the area that you're going into. Maybe you can get a map, print out a map, have a, you know, most people, if they're not real big into the outdoors, they're not going to be familiar with a compass, so it's going to be useless if they carry it. But if you're going to make that a routine thing, be comfortable with, you know, how to use your compass. There's plenty of things on YouTube, on the internet that you can research to find information. But I would say the biggest thing probably in the summertime is some kind of light source and a map of the area you're looking to go into. Wintertime, I would say a totally different bear. I think it's preparedness in the fact that prepare to, you know, if you're going in, be prepared to potentially stay a night. I mean, if you're going back in the backwards, you know, you know, dress in layers. You know, obviously, cotton kills is the old saying. So whatever you end up, you know, putting on, make sure it's not cotton. You know, synthetic, layer up appropriately.
Is it hikers more? Is it hunters? Is there any user group that snowmobilers?
I mean, yeah, I would say from what I've seen over the, you know, 13 years or so here in Delaware County, it would be more the hikers. You get the hunters every now and then.
Yeah.
But they're typically if you're able to get a hold of them by radio or dispatch has spoken to them, they're prepared, you know, to stay tonight potentially.
Yeah.
You know, with proper clothing layers, you know, some kind of fire starting material. So there, you know, it happens every now and then, obviously, and we're always thinking about that when hunting season rolls around, which is just coming up. Obviously, I think early bear is going to be starting tomorrow. So
the bow season.
Bow, I'm sorry. Early bow.
Hey, so. I was in the woods one time over by Peekamoose, and I was walking, and this is crazy, but a rock shifted and almost caught my foot.
Yeah.
Yep. And for like 3 seconds, I was like, I can't move my foot.
Really?
And then you're like, holy crap, how am I going to get out of here?
Yeah.
Scary. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, it's a scary feeling. I think it's when people, they go into that panic mode.
Yeah.
I think that's just, you know, being human, too.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things you can try to control that, but if you're not somebody that typically is in the woods and something like that happens, you go into panic mode, and that's usually when people end up making big mistakes, getting themselves hurt more or potentially even further into the woods. So I just see so many people that just, like I said, the summertime hikers, it's, you know, the headlamps, some light source or a map. If they had that, 9 times out of 10, they could walk themselves out. Yeah. You know, just be somewhat familiar how a map is, you know, topo map, and then that headlamp. Because we get so many calls of people, hey, it's getting dark. I have no light. I can't see beyond, you know, a foot in front of me.
You get a call like,
Yeah, we had Mud Pond, which is further down in the county, town of Colchester, back in, I believe it was May. We had a group that hiked in, up like 5 or 6. They tried to do the loop back to the parking lot, and the old town road abandoned since like 2006.
Yeah.
Right? So they come out to the trailhead. They have no clue yet. Shrubs and everything built, you know, grown up, and they had no clue as to where to go. They had no map, no headlamp, no light source. It was an easy search for us. We just came in from the south in Cook's Falls, and we were at the trail mile and picked them up at the trailhead. Luckily, they had service, and they were able to basically tell us where they were and took a picture of the sign on the 4x4 post. So we're like, yep, nice. That's where they are, right? So it's an easy one. But the ones that, the ones that aren't so lucky doing that, and it turns into a process. Lamacella search back in 2017, that turned into a bigger one here and involved, you know, Arkville, Margaretville, and those guys there. So that was
cell phones, on top of mountains, a lot of people probably have service, right?
It varies.
Spotty?
It really is spotty. Delaware County, there's only certain areas, right? Guys probably know, right? Certain areas where there's actually decent cell coverage. If I go down into, say, Big Pond, Little Pond area in Town of Andes, or down in Colchester, Russell Brook, no cell coverage. Okay. So I was surprised these guys down at Mud Pond actually had cell coverage to reach out.
You ever get anyone just calling you since they can and be like, we're tired?
Can you guys help us out? Yeah, no, that's funny you say that. I have not. I got a story.
We're done.
Yeah, Rip Dierstein, who was an old-time ranger in Greene County, great guy when it came to rope. I mean, he was like the guru of ropes.
Yeah.
And I heard a story of him getting a little fired up on a younger male who basically wanted to be carried out because he just didn't want to walk. And he just yelled at him. He says, I checked your injury. It's stable. You can walk. Get out of the basket. And he made him walk.
Get out of my basket.
Maybe it wasn't that extreme, but he made him walk. But we have had people, I guess, to a point where they, you know, they're physically exhausted.
Yeah.
And obviously we work with them and deal with it appropriately. We're not going to say, no, we're not coming for you type thing.
Right.
But there's times where I think some people, they think their injury's worse than it really is. And obviously if we can, identify if it's a stable or unstable injury. If it's stable and we're able to put weight on it, it's much safer to bring them out that way than to involve, more manpower, more resources, a rope system set up. So obviously it's something that we have to identify in the field. But I haven't had that.
What are some other things specific to the Catskills would be like? When it comes to mind is ginseng in the early bear season.
Yep.
Right. How is that working out?
Right. Good. Like you said, early bow starts tomorrow. Just to clarify, so nobody's out there. Right. The ranger said. Hey, he said it on the radio. Yeah.
Early bears passed.
Early bears passed. Right. This past Sunday. Sunday ended. Yeah.
How did that work out? Is there a lot of people taking advantage of that or?
Yeah. It once again, I think it varies. I have not seen over the years a ton of hunters out there going for early bear. I know a couple of seasons were pretty warm.
Yeah.
So I think some people are like, I'm not even going to make the attempt. But you got some diehards that still go out.
I saw some people.
And usually early bow is pretty busy first week or so.
Yeah.
And then it dies down. The hunting seasons have really changed. Talking to Ken Kittle, who was here for a year and a half before, when I first came in and he retired, he told me how over the years he would see how it really is a declining sport. Mm. And I would agree. Electronics has, become such a big thing. It's one of those things I think that I would say sad that it's dying so much with my my own personal views, but declining quite a bit. And we're always trying to, I guess, get people to get out in the outdoors, whether it be hunting or fishing or just, camping, hiking, whatever. I think it's just the way society is playing out over the years. It's just a dying breed, dying sport.
Yeah.
It's kind of unfortunate, but, the electronics.
Electronics competition.
Yeah, exactly.
Your attention.
That's it.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, and tonight's topic is Forest Ranger Joseph Bink. What I'd like to ask is, what's something cool that you've seen on state land while patrolling or whatever? What's something, anything that sticks out to you? Look at that. And also ginseng. I asked you about ginseng because that's a special thing to the Catskills.
Yeah, I avoided that, right? Yeah.
Well, you don't have to talk about anything.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You can avoid.
I'm trying to think of. Yeah. I'm doing my best here. Something special. I'm trying to. Honestly, I'm not going to lie to you, Ryan. I can't think of something that really sticks out.
Anything historical or, every time when I walk in the woods, a lot of times lands that are now wilderness areas, you'll find sugar bush equipment, farming equipment, anything like that.
Right, right.
Old tan bark road stuff.
That makes sense. Yep, absolutely. I guess, I'll jump back to yesterday. I was up on Dry Brook Ridge Wild Forest.
Yeah.
And I was up and just checking some stuff up near the lean-to. And a couple things up there. And coming down through, the old lean-to got crushed. The German Holland lean-to got crushed.
Oh, yeah.
Probably back in 2012, 2013. And we finally got a new one up on Pack Attack and a couple years back. But just coming down, some of this old, dropping down, downhill, down to the drainage, below the old lean-to, you come across these old roads going up in there. And I took a picture of it. I tried to take a good picture and tell my wife to post it on her Facebook page, but of an old bridge, you know, that was there. It collapsed now. Yeah, collapsed. It's collapsed. But I stood there, and I thought to myself, so back in the day, you try to, and it's tough to do it, but I always try to do that whenever I'm in the woods and I find something like this. You know, you look back or think back, like, what was it, you know, what was it like, say, 50 years ago at this, right here at this location, or 100 years ago? You know, this obviously was a bridge. And was this like a town road or a little road that goes up to, you know, a homestead that used to be up in here?
Right.
And it's peaceful. I tell my wife it's some of the, you know, best times in the woods when you find stuff like that. And you start thinking, like, wow, you know, it's good meditation. It humbles you. It brings you back to, hey, even all the bad stuff going on in life and you know, whatever in the world, you can kind of step back and enjoy that moment and think about, wow, what hardships did they have back in the day at the location.
Yeah.
I think of John Burroughs, and I think of, like, the Burroughs Range, and my son got involved helping out with Patty Rudge up at the Woodchuck Lodge in Roxbury. And we did a hike up the drainage. We didn't actually go up toward Wittenberg, but the other portion, going up to a giant ledge. And he used to go up in that drainage, and he just loved it. He talked about, you know, some of the stuff he had written. He loved that area, looking up toward the ledges on Giant Ledge, which I'm assuming they referred to as Giant Ledge back then. Maybe not. But talking about, you know, the homesteads up at the end of that drainage and that bowl. And you think that wasn't too long ago.
No.
Over 100 some years, right?
Yeah, crazy.
You know, and you think how society has changed so much, and when you really think about it, you think back just to the basics. You know, so like yesterday. So, you know, I guess I kind of take every day for what it is, but when I come across things like that, yesterday's a prime example where I just step back and you know, like I said, I took a picture of it and I sent it to my wife. She didn't post it, though. She wouldn't listen to me. She's listening, too, so I'm going to hear about this.
She's like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, no.
It looks like there's a path.
Yeah. No, she didn't get time. So, She would have. She does a pretty good job posting stuff. But, it was cool seeing that. And I hadn't been up in that area at the 13 years I've been here. So it's just, you know, you come across something like that, and you really do take a step back and think, like, wow. And the text I sent to her was like the Trail of Happiness. I sent the picture. I said, Trail of Happiness. And she gave me a thumbs up. And you think about it, you know, you think about just how stressful life can be and things we come across, and you step back and really just take a good look at what life is really about and humble yourself and think about what are the priorities, right? So, and those locations kind of bring me back and kind of soothe my soul.
It's like a bittersweet kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because it must have been hard back then.
Oh, man.
I can only imagine, you know, but, you know, obviously I would say a less stressful time, maybe. I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't say that back then. Who knows?
Yeah, we've talking about this recently. I was talking about someone opening day of hunting season several years ago, right? Remember? It was warm. It was in the 70s. I was on a remote area in the Catskills, but it was a farm at one time.
Yeah.
And it was in the 70s. Beautiful. But I knew the forecast. And I was like, tomorrow is going to be 8 to 10 inches of snow here.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, can you imagine living back then and not knowing that? Like, you're outside, you're like, oh, it's great, not knowing a 10-inch snowstorm's coming your way on top of a 2,500-foot mountain.
Just 12 hours later.
So was that the opening weekend of a couple years back, right?
Opening day. Yep.
16, 17, something like that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then we got that dump of snow. Yeah. And back then, you never know it was coming, and you just have to deal with it.
Crazy. Intense.
Yeah.
Well, we got about 2.5 minutes left. And I've hogged a lot of time. John, you have anything to ask the forest ranger? Right here. He's right here, you know?
Well, where are the big bucks at? You got to tell me.
I keep that close to my heart.
Yeah, right. I'm sure you know where there's a couple hanging out.
They're out there.
He's not going to talk about big bucks or ginseng. So just forget about it.
All right. So,
I jumped over that,
That's fine. We can let it go, all right? Yeah. But the big bucks, you know, that carpenter guy, he was – He was the reason why I looked at the forest ranger job was he was really enthralled into fire, but he's also like, well, you know, I also scout for deer a lot too.
Yeah.
You know? I was like, this seems like a really good job.
Yeah, that's part of, you know, part for the course. Yeah, absolutely.
So, what's your number one call you get?
Number one call, burn permits.
Yeah,
really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. It's you know, we get the calls on obviously, you know, with mountain lions and other questions.
Oh yeah.
Mountain lions, right? Yeah. You guys released them.
Yeah, See, you're gonna get me to say something here. Yeah, no. But no, we get calls, but yeah, the burn permits. I get nonstop burn permits, which is fine. And you know, I look at that as something that, you know, hopefully makes people think when they burn.
Well, let's correct it. It's usually the town that offers the burn permit, right?
Well,
wrong?
There's four. We have four towns in Delaware County that are fire towns.
Yeah.
And the town clerks help us out, but two of the towns they don't. Not that they don't want to help us out, it's just that they don't issue the permit. So the calls come into myself and Ranger Ellis.
So you do issue burn permits?
Yeah, we do quite a few.
Oh,
and you know, it's you know, the way that the regs are set up now, it's for brush and brush only. And you know, it can be kind of tedious over time.
Yeah.
But you know, the one good aspect of it, and I always tell, you know, people, is that it makes people think before they burn. They got a piece of paper that they signed, or they should have signed.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, it's got guidelines, conditions that, you know, they should abide by. Now, outside of a fire town, so say if you go into town of Delhi, they're not required to have a fire, you know, a burn permit.
Okay.
So people, you know, potentially might be more nonchalant and not think about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the permits are kind of, like I said, a little outdated, but they, in the end, they're there to help prevent fires. Right?
Why are they a fire town? Like, because I don't know if the town of Olive, where I live, is a fire
town. Yeah, so any town that's inside the Catskill Park, whether in Catskill or even Adirondacks, you know, inside the Blue Line, is considered a fire town. So back in the day, early 1900s, fire wardens were issued burn permits. A lot different back then when they really needed to do it. They were, you know, signed, and that's how the permits came into play, and it hasn't changed in law. So until they change it in gun law, it stays.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we got on From the Forest, and if you missed the show, it's a good one. Forest Ranger Joseph Bink, Region 4, covers Eastern Delaware County. And that's all the time we got on From the Forest. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure, guys. Absolutely.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hill.